Hey folks, welcome to the Wrench Turners Podcast, the show that's about improving the life, well-being, and productivity of mechanics everywhere. I am your host, Mr. Joshua Taylor, founder of Wrench Turners Online. On today's show, we get to talk with a great individual, Christopher Johnson. So let's get right into it. Christopher, thank you very much for giving us some time and energy out of your day and sharing a little bit of your stories, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me on here. It's
awesome.
An honor to be here.
Appreciate it. So, Christopher, tell us some of the folks. You know, we've had a lot of interesting folks on over the last year and a half, almost 60 episodes deep of one to one. It's pretty cool. Anywhere from vendors to people who had family in the trade. One of our last guests said it was Hot Wheels that got us into the business. I wonder, what got you into automotive?
Not far off the Hot Wheels, only more full-size ones. As I do remember, I didn't even want to get my, wasn't even interested in getting my driver's license. Didn't really work on cars or anything mechanical, like, you know, taking computers apart and whatnot. But sitting at home with a broken leg after playing indoor soccer, playing indoor soccer. I remember flipping through the TV in the back room and coming across, I want to say it was the Champ Car race. Can't remember. I want to say it was Detroit, but I could be wrong on that one. Then I was hooked ever since. And I think later on that year, went to an American Le Mans Series race at Mosport and got into doing timing and scoring the year after that. But since I saw that race, I'm like, I want to do that. I want to race cars. Of course, I couldn't get to that level, but you know, I just wanted to race cars, and from there on, started plotting to try to work on race cars or try to race cars myself. And you know, don't have the funding to pay someone to do it, so I had to figure out how to do it myself. And there's
awesome.
Been the last probably 30 or 25 or more years of my life gone.
Awesome. All right, Chris, take a quick pause. Can you move the microphone a little bit farther away from your face? A little bit? Because I'm getting every pop. Okay, cool.
That'd be better.
Mark that, and I'll edit that out. Cool. That's awesome. So American, you like one of the first races you went to was an American Series Le Mans?
Yeah, the American Le Mans Series. So the race you'd see at the Le Mans in France. 24 hours of Le Mans. They had the Le Mans series running through North America. And one of their visits was always to Mosport, which is about an hour from me, because they also, the owner of the series also owned that track, so the series always went there.
Okay.
So that was the first, the closest big race I could get to without going to the IndyCar race down in Toronto.
Okay. Now, that said, so have you I'm trying to formulate a question here. So how did that translate into working what you're doing now? Like, how did that work for you?
I wanted to, like, actually experience racing cars, working on race cars. And then I was still in high school at the time, so I went to shop class then. And started doing ice racing, actually, and autocross racing. Autocross, because you had parking lots, closed course, pylon, you against the clock, and ice racing is effectively like curling with cars. You take about 20 or so cars, put them on an ice track up in Minden, and you go for your 8, 10, 12 laps, and let carnage ensue.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's always fun.
Awesome. So where does that translate now? How was that first year working on stuff for you working then?
Well, I started doing it, I guess, like actually working on cars, like people's cars off the street. At the end of high school, I had a whole lot of extra credits to do, and I wound up helping a guy open a shop at the co-op student. So I took about 8 credits in co-op and I helped the guy literally from 8 to 5 open and run the shop from the ground up. So we were putting
Okay, so what were you working on at the time then? A little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. They have a small shop in a small town where I actually currently live now, Colbert. So we were working on old crusty caravans and Aerostars and Windstars or Neons when they still existed, whatever.
I had a whole pile of Neons. Yeah, awesome. So what was that first year like then? Was it a challenge for you? Like, again, I referenced, you know, there's all kind of dynamics on what that first year really looks like, right? You've got individuals who had to push a broom and shovel and garbage and coffee and shuttle like myself. And you get folks the other end of the spectrum that, you know, basically day one, week one, you know, they're fixing stuff, pulling engines and doing major repairs and stuff like that. Was that where in the middle at either end of the spectrum were you? Did you fall in that little shop?
Pretty much all of that. we had to sweep the shop out because it was full of crap from the previous owners. So we had to actually sweep all that out. We had to get the lettering to put it up. We had one working hoist and we had to install a hoist. So I helped install the hoist, install an air compressor. Go get heating fuel, go to the parts store to get the parts when they were running around, and helping the guy work on the cars as well, learning how to do brakes and, you know, literally doing everything.
So you were truly being an apprentice. You were not just there to push a broom and help out and assist and things like that. You were actually doing all of the things. You were assisting and doing the actual work too. That's awesome. I think that's kind of like sounds like the sweet spot, because, you know, as much as I don't like the phrase pay your dues, you kind of have to pay your dues in a certain way. You have to kind of earn their respect and earn their trust and get them to understand that you're there to work and that you're willing to learn. You're willing to put in the effort required to get better, grow and learn, and that you are worth the time, energy and effort. Because face it, young apprentices are so much effort. I remember, like, I was so much work as a young individual. I was just so much work. And you have to prove that the effort involved in turning you into a technician is worth it. So that's awesome that you're getting not only that, but you're also getting not just getting the stick. You're also getting a little bit of the, hey, here, learn from this. And here, that's awesome. So after that first year or so where you were, you know, you kind of eased your way out of doing the broom pushing and stuff, what have you been doing since?
Well, after that, I needed to go and finish the high school credits, so I needed to go get a regular job, and he didn't have the money to actually pay me as an apprentice. So I wound up getting an apprentice position at Cobra Honda, which is right next door to where we're currently, the same same owner, and worked there for about a year, but doing all the same kind of things. We're doing brake jobs, diagnostics on stuff, then we're also fixing the oil pump and getting tires in and out. And from there, I went and worked at a race shop for about 7 years.
Oh, nice.
After I finished my second year. Yeah, it would have been my second year of trade school. I blew up an engine, let's say, at Cobra Honda. I left the drain plug loose. And I didn't have a job to come back to when I went to trade school. I mean, it is what it is. I made a boo-boo, a big boo-boo. And I own that. So. But then I got the opportunity to work at the race shop, which I always kind of wanted.
Okay, I want to pause you there for a second.
Yep.
So, folks, I really appreciate your honesty. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've had technicians in coaching that are unwilling to hold themselves accountable for their actions. And I realize it was a while ago and it'll have never happened again. And I know we all have stories, as whether we're from technicians or from consumers, where somebody somewhere in your, you know, your immediate vicinity of friends and family have had, you know, they've had that experience where someone somewhere has left a drain plug loose, or they've left the oil cap off and there's been oil everywhere, or, you know, didn't bolt up the under trays properly and it was hanging down and scraping on the ground, whatever the case would be, everybody's got a story like that. But seldom are the people who actually make that mistake willing to hold themselves accountable for that mistake. Doesn't matter how big or how little that mistake is. Most of the time, the folks that shouldn't be in our trade are the ones that are unwilling to hold themselves accountable. And that's what I struggle with technicians and coaching, is their inability to hold themselves accountable. The fact that you're willing to A, admit you've made a mistake, and B, admit it, is a really big testament and learning opportunity for many young mechanics and other mechanics out there, period, to say, you know, this is what leadership is starting to look like, holding yourself accountable as much as you hold your team accountable. So I really appreciate you for sharing that. I really appreciate you for sharing that.
Oh, that's what we strive to get, strive to teach with our younger technicians and whatnot. It's very hard sometimes. They don't want to admit the fault or whatever, but I would say with anyone, if you fucked up, not just own it. I would respect you a lot more if you just say, sorry, I screwed this up, and we'll get it sorted out. That's much easier to say than, you know, digging yourself a hole or digging yourself out of a hole because you threw something up and you're, you know, backpedaling so hard on it and trying to cover it up. But just, if you screw something up, just say, sorry, I screwed this up. Let's fix it. A whole lot more respect from everyone in the shop, from your boss, to your coworkers, who are just doing that.
Right.
And that's what I do all the time.
Oh, there's a little bit of delay here. So now that you've been to the race shop and you've spent, you know, a whole bunch of years at the race shop, what's some of the fun stuff you got to do at the race shop? I want a little bit more into there.
Oh, that was a huge experience of doing everything and learning so much. I think the first job I had when I got there, middle of winter, I'll say it's February or something like that, middle of winter, to get ready for a new race series that was starting in 2007. And so here's the C5 that just came back, C5 Corvette, just came back from down south having a carbon fiber body put on it. Let's yank out all the wiring out of it, label everything as it's coming out. Here's the factory service manuals that we had. Figure out what everything is that we don't need, unpin it all, trace it all back, unpin it from both ends, then loom it and stuff it back in the car. That was a good experience. That's why I like doing wiring to this day.
When you get that far into the weeds and doing wiring, yes, you have to, you almost have to become an expert in it. And if you don't love it, you immediately dump right out of it. It is not easy. Like, it's one thing to do diagnostics on mechanicals, and it's another thing to do diagnostics on NVH, but like the three, you know, mechanical, electrical, and NVH. That's basically the three groups of diagnostics that you have. And you either have skill set, very seldom do people have skill sets for all three. Usually have a skill sets for one, and you have to like it to stay in it. Because there's so much effort that goes involved in becoming a master of that craft, right? Understanding the depth, like the pure depth of understanding that you need in order to be a true electrical diagnostician is crazy, like crazy. And as someone who is color deficient, who can look into my own background, and even though there was a little pop-up sign, because I can control the color of the lights with my phone, you know, to make things give depth and things of that nature. It actually says magenta on my phone as the color. I couldn't tell you that. That's blue. This just looks blue. It's magenta. But when you're looking at a wiring diagram that says magenta and you go to the wiring loom and all you see is blue, like me, please know that you are literally fighting a battle that you're probably not going to win, because yes, I came up with workarounds. Yes, you can look up at pinouts and go, you know, this wire is, you know, pin 5 on this junction connector, whatever. But that only gets you so far, because if you go to, let's say it's magenta wire at pin 5, right? Let's say you go to that pin, that, that section and you look at pin 5, if you don't know that it's not magenta, you don't know that you need to question it. I referenced the 20, like my favorite, most hellish experience as a technician, the 2009-2010 Jeep Grand Cherokee diesels. Everything was wrong. Everything was wrong. Pinouts were wrong. Colors were wrong. Where the weather connectors were wrong. Where the junction connectors were wrong. The size of the junction connectors were wrong. And the stuff that's traveling down each of the wires is wrong. Like when you want to get into a field, specifically if you're thinking about specializing, you know, you've been in mechanics for a while, 3 to 5 years, and you're realizing that you've got enough training now that you need to start specializing to make some really good money. Understand that you should go down the rabbit hole of understanding what a level 3, level 4, level 5 doctor of the house, so to speak, of that specialty does and has to learn. And each one of those categories, whether it's transmission, engine, electrical, NVH, it doesn't matter. Go down the rabbit hole and read all of the descriptions of the trainings. Because that's one little tidbit that the foreman taught me a while back. Read the training descriptions. If doing the training at level 6 and you're at level 2, if the training at level 6 does not entice you, don't go down that specialty path. No matter how much money you think you're going to make, don't go down that specialty path, because that's one very clear area where you are probably not going to succeed. So anyway, I digress. So you're working on race cars and you're doing lots of wiring on race cars. So what are you up to now?
Well, did that for 7 years, then with the shop, kind of the owners, it got bought up. You're good for a while. Then the owners kind of split. I didn't want to stay there, so I had to get a real job. So I go, a real job, not a fun job. I say being a race car mechanic was great. I learned like so much about the processes I do now from that.
Mm-hmm.
Which translates into the real world of being an auto mechanic. I had to go work at a Honda dealer up in Peterborough, and I learned a lot more from there too. At the time, I had a friend that worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Got me the in. If you listen to my podcast with Jeffrey Compton on the Jaden Mechanic podcast, I went a little more in depth.
Mm-hmm.
Who got me in there and why it was a bit of a target, but anywho, learned a lot there from my foreman there, Kenny Nishitoba. I went and worked, went to a Kia dealership after that in Lindsay. I lived in Lindsay and got a $5 an hour pay raise for going 5 minutes from home, so that was kind of a no-brainer.
That's it.
No matter what.
If you could, and this is one of the things that I did, this is one of the, like, if you can work 6 minutes from home, that is almost a no-brainer on its own. But if you can work 6 minutes from home and make $5 more an hour, it's like the heavens lift.
It's all working on Kias, but I mean, you know, take your pluses and minuses there.
I'm sorry to all my Kia friends, but working for Kia is kind of like job security right now.
It is. so that's just coming out in and out like they have a zipper on them. It's great. Wound up moving back because I'm from Coburg. Lived here for 26 years before I moved away, and then eventually started dating a girl I met 30 plus years ago, and we reconnected, started dating, and decided, all right, we're going on vacation. What are we going to do when we come back? Are we going to move to Lindsay or Coburg? My family's down here. Her family that's in this country was mostly all right here. So we decided, through it, I had another friend that worked at a Mazda dealer down here in Coburg. Got mm-hmm. a job. Even without an interview there, moved the toolbox down, went on vacation for 2 weeks, then came back and started working down here. Then went up selling my house, and I've been down here ever since June of 2017.
Nice.
Coburn has it.
Nice. Now, okay, so you've been around the block now. So if I get this right, you got 17 years under your belt now?
I think actually professionally I'm at about 20 right now. Making money at it, I would have started as an apprentice in 04.
Okay, so we started very, very close to the same time because I was officially signed as an apprentice, I think, in 2003. And I think I did my – sorry, 2002. And I think I did my first round of Ontario school at Centennial in May of 03. So – and I think I finished – I did my second in 04, my third in 05, and I did them like – no, I finished in 04. I finished in 04? Anyway, semantics. Anyway, I wrote my C of Q in 07. So we're probably pretty close in age, as it were, professionally. But I started, you and I both, we definitely started before we were officially professionally apprentices. So yeah, we're both in the same rough boat, a little over 20 years.
I think I did my last round of school at the end of 07.
Cool. So yeah, you finished your school and I wrote about the same time. So you probably wrote in the spring of 08, give or take, right?
I should have, but I actually wrote in 2011.
Good.
I was like, oh, I'm working on race cars. I'm not going to need this. And at some point, I was like, hey, you know what? I may want to get that license. To back us up.
Well, you got her.
Oh yeah. Well, it was
gotcha.
What 5 years out of working at a real shop. I studied for about.
But don't sell yourself short. You know, 5 years. You got 7 years working on race cars, right? It's not that it's not real work. It's not that it's not real mechanic work. It's just an entirely different structure to what the majority of us in automotive mechanics do. It's the same stuff, but sort of and sort of not all at the same time. So yeah. It's interesting. It's an interesting story to tell. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. So that you got 20 years, give or take, if not more. And you worked on race cars, you worked on Hondas, and you worked on Kias. And you're actually not that far away. You're only about 2.5 hour drive away, so that's cool. So you're not that far away from if you're out that way, you're not that far away from Jeff Compton. That's cool. So we need to get together at some stage. But that leads us to the last question. Now that you've got all this time and energy into the trade, you've got all these tools, all this experience, and so on and so forth. What would be your one piece of advice? What would be your one piece of advice for a mechanic out there to be happier, healthier, more productive?
That's a nice long one of those loaded questions. But as I tried to tell our apprentices and whatnot, be pay more attention or be more concerned about doing the job you're getting paid for than getting paid for the job you're doing.
Oh my goodness!
That's what I see a lot.
Can I let me pause you for a second? I need to reiterate this for my brain. Pay more attention to the job you're getting paid for, not how much you're getting paid for the job.
Something along those lines.
I preach that you basically should not flag your time. I think you should, but there's a time and a place and a how and a when to flag your time in a day, especially if you're flat rate. But obviously, if you're hourly, unless you have a production bonus, you're probably not going to flag your time. Most don't that are hourly or straight time. They don't flag their hours. They still should because it should be still something that you're cognizant of the day. But if you're flat rate, the tendency is to finish a job, flag your time. Finish a job, flag your time. Be in the middle of a long job, flag your time. Flag your time at lunch, flag your time at break time, flag your time at the end of the day. If you spend even if you spend a minute every time you flag your time, and you do that five times, let's say you do it six times a day. That's 6 minutes. That's point one every day. So you're spending a half hour of your week every week wasted on flagging your time during working time. Now, if you flag your time at the end of the day, after you've clocked out, not a big deal. You're on your clock, not on the business's clock. Now, technically, that's one and the same during the day. Let's say you work 9 to 5. So that's important. Move your flag time after hours. But more importantly, take Christopher's advice. Worry about the job you're getting paid for, not how much you're getting paid for the job while you're working on the job. That's an awesome phrase. That's awesome. Thank you for that.
Enjoy it. Have it. You can do it.
Awesome. So, Christopher, I really appreciate the time. I thank you for your sharing your experience. I didn't realize that we were so close, so we definitely need to get together at some stage. But really appreciate time, energy, and effort coming on.
Not a problem.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Folks, that is the end of today's Wrench Turners podcast. But as you all know, there will be one coming next week. And we've got another great one coming for you. Now, remember that Wrench Turners merch in the link below. Check it out. It's so awesome that my mother bought some. Newsletter. I'm going to start rehashing some of the stuff that I posted like a year and a half ago. I've already started to pull them up, but check them out. So now we're going to have effectively a newsletter every week. One is old, so you can review it. One is new, so you can check out the new stuff. Three, we've got some really cool stuff coming up. Later on this year, sometime in probably June, July-ish, I'm going to do a whole series with recruiters so that you folks can understand what's in the marketplace, understand how recruiters work, because I know that's a really big topic in 2024 going forward, that everybody seems to be a recruiter. So I want to make sure that you guys are looking for a new job or looking for your first job, get an understanding of what a good recruiter is, what they're going to look for, what they're going to do for you, if it costs any money, where it costs you money, and things of that nature, so that you guys walk into these interviews and walk into these conversations armed with as much knowledge as I can give you. So watch out for that later on this year. And folks, always remember, always, always remember, negative pushes, positive pulls, and always clean your toys before you put them away.